Hello and welcome. This is your host, Kennedy Foster. It's so good to have you today. I have a question for you. Are you ready to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and therefore be able to do the impossible? If that's important for you, what are you going to have to do? Well, you're going to have to change. Change how you're probably doing life a little bit. You're going to have to step into a greater sense of yourself, a greater part of yourself. And that part that is not the brain shatter, right? It's not, you know, changing your body so much. It's not about what you eat. It's not about what you own or don't own. There's something greater within you that is guiding you and showing you the direction, right? Think about it. Have you ever gotten still for just a minute and listened to all the mind chatter go on? What is that? Where does that come from? You know, have you ever asked that? Like, what's that all about? Well, when you start asking that question, and I asked it 30 years ago when I started to meditate. And by the way, this is not a show on meditation. This is a show on change and helping you to change. When I noticed that, I was convinced that I needed to somehow slow that thought, that chatter down, slow it down. I'd like to stop it sometimes. How about you? Well, when I got clear with that, there's something else observing that chatter, right? That's what I'm talking about. When we start to get in to a place called the zone, right? So I'm a cyclist and have been for a couple decades, right? I love riding my bike, right? And at one point, my chatter shuts down and I get into the zone. And in the zone, there's no time. I mean, time collapses. I can start out and I can go for, I don't know, a 100-mile ride if, you know, if I'm doing it. And honestly, the time just collapses because I'm doing something I love and I'm doing it quick. And I don't know if I'm doing it quick, but it feels like I'm going fast. It feels like I'm traveling and transcending time. So that's a place, though, when we're in that place, that change happens. And, you know, there's a part of us when we set intention to change, and we don't even know how we're going to do it. I know this, that the powers to be, right, the people, the places, the things that you need to change show up as soon as you get out of denial that, you know, there's something going on that you don't see. And you say, I'm done with that. I'm going to change this up. I'm going to make it better. I'm going to tune out for a while. I'm going to tune in for a while. And I'm going to let life unfold in a way that supports whatever that intention is. If you haven't tried doing that, it's a really cool thing to do. So set intention. Allow yourself to get in a quiet place and still place. Allow yourself to see what comes through. You know, sometimes you can journal about this, you know. I used to journal also. I used to take out every morning. I do what I call a morning papers, right? And I would journal, like I'd commit to journaling 3 pages in my notebook. The first page would be all logical BS. The next page, something else would come through. And the third page, there'd actually be some wisdom there. It was pretty cool. So, you know, the world doesn't need, by the way, and you don't need any more information. What we need is wisdom. If you want to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible, then you need wisdom. So that's what my guest is going to bring to us today. I have a very special guest. We're going to talk about his wisdom. I'm going to add some of mine, hopefully, if it comes through today. And we're going to have some fun. So stay tuned. We'll be right back, and I'll bring my guest in.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better. My knees feel better. My back feels better. It makes me feel stronger, too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper Quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving. I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Kendi Foster, your host for the Voices of Courage show. A very special guest, Julio Vincent. Julio, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for having me. Hi, everybody.
And for those of you that don't know Julio, he's the author of the new book, Please Unsubscribe. Thanks. Now, which is now available. I believe it's printed by Simon & Schuster. Is that right, Julio?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So Simon & Schuster, it's available everywhere is what I know. Yeah. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And, you know, he got a quote in his book, Pick of the Month for August 2024, Oliver Berkman, modern age sage and New York Times bestselling author, called it simultaneously hilarious and deadly serious. Julio was nominated for the Audi Award from the Audio Publishers Association for voicing the audiobook. The book is follow-up on Julio's virtual essay, Prepare for the Ultimate Gaslighting, which sparked a worldwide conversation reaching more than 21 million readers in 96 countries on Medium. And he's also a weekly contributor on Medium. If you haven't been there, you ought to check it out. Anyway, Julio, there's so much more to you than this book. And I'm so glad to meet you. Tell me a little bit about your background and why you decided to write Please Unsubscribe, Thanks.
Sure. I'm a kid from the boroughs of New York City. No longer a kid, but certainly someone who is sort of the kitchen table. I went on to have a really great career in film and television so far. Life kind of got very, very busy and unmanageable and what I like to call relentless before the pandemic. And the pandemic hit, and it was the largest wake-up call of my life. And for so many people across the world, was a really clear moment of clarity and illumination where we kind of realized like, oh, I don't necessarily want to be on the treadmill that I'm on. And I certainly don't want to be running as fast as I am. And it was a moment of breath, and it was a moment of stillness, at least in my experience. And so I wrote about it in the book, and the book is not necessarily all about the pandemic. It's really kind of relevant to even what's going on in the world today, but it's, reflections on, you know, where we get that sense that we have to go, and how we can sort of step back and reevaluate.
You know, that sense of go, that's a really interesting place, isn't it? Because, you know, we live in a society that it seems like everything is speeding up, and I've been a life coach for 30 plus years. I always tell my clients, if you want to succeed, you got to slow down. But how do we even get there? You know, how do we get there?
You know, the slowness is so valuable, and I think at least my experience during the pandemic taught me that. And I think before that, my understanding of slowness was that it was problematic, right? Is that like, you know, I was kind of raised in this very high achievement, high competition, you've got to succeed world and educational landscape and economy. And we don't talk about the value of slowness in America. We don't talk about how incredibly life-changing it can be if you can actually get quiet. And, I think getting to that place takes a lot of practice and is hard, and people do it in a ton of different ways. But I found when it finally got quiet, I could hear myself instead of the endless and countless voices that are coming at me all day long.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, I think it was Leonardo da Vinci that said, Leonardo, you know, one of the greatest creators of the Renaissance, said, isolation is the price of greatness. And then I think it was Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, one of the great sages that came in our country in 1924 to bring yoga from India. He said that stillness is the price of greatness. And there's another great sage. He's alive today. His name is Irvin Laszlo. Irvin's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice and written about 106 books. And I asked Irvin one day, I said, what's the price of greatness? And he says, living from the mindset of oneness. And what else did he say? And knowing who you are. I thought that's interesting. Yeah.
I think the oneness is so key. And I think that is something that could not have been clearer in the last 5 years, especially during the pandemic. But I think all we've seen is the power of thinking as we instead of thinking as me all the time. I don't think it's a stretch to say that in America we're sort of trained by big business and our culture to think of myself first, right? Think of me. And that has certain value in certain contexts, but ultimately the we-ness and the oneness is an important element to not only contribution, but to, you know, to success and to happiness. So.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And I, you know, it's interesting because we got some me's on TV a lot, right? In the media. And those me's believe that, you know, they're, you know, they attract a lot of other me's. It's all about me, you know, and it those me's track the other me's. And then they think that that everybody in the world thinks like them. And we, you know, there's a lot of us that have really made that shift into realizing that we really are one. And, you know, whether we're thinking about the environment, what we're thinking about, how we show up in our families, how we show up in our communities, you know, how, you know, what I do impacts you, you know, you impact me, you know, at some level we're impacting each other. And I think that that mindset, at least really, I believe, has to start to permeate and get rid of the me generation, right? Allaboutme.com. And move more and more into the oneness generation. We're all one here on this planet, right?
Yeah, we've got to be able to help each other through not only life, but through the experiences that we have while we're here. And I think it's just so key for us to be aware, right, that so much more can come from kind of being together and doing things as a whole. Doesn't mean we're going to agree. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy. Doesn't mean it's going to be without conflict, but that being the goal is a very, very different premise and intention than, you know, I'm going to get up today and just do what I have to do for me and screw everybody else, you know?
Yeah, screw everybody else. Listen, can you elaborate on that concept of the ultimate gaslighting on how it relates to the new book?
Sure.
Please unsubscribe me. Thanks.
Yeah. So during the pandemic, I wrote an essay on medium.com called Prepare for the Ultimate Gaslighting. And it was really not only a explanation of the wake up call that I was having, but it was a call for readers to take the opportunity to kind of step back and reevaluate what was important, what was meaningful. The pandemic was an enormous opportunity to do that. And it's 5 years later. And my concern was that we would be lulled back into complacency, that we would be lulled back into the regular habits, the regular behaviors, the constant sense of autopilot and being on a treadmill. And so I called it out pretty forcefully. And I think there was a large effort made by big business and by the government to kind of get everybody back to normal. And obviously there were great benefits to getting the economy and the world back and up and running again, no doubt. But my concern at the time, and it lingers, frankly, 5 years later, is that getting back to normal is not necessarily always a good thing, and that we should take the opportunity to really think through how much normalcy we want to get back to.
Well, you know, I think normal is an interesting concept. If you, you know, in my world, normal means that I'm in a place where of creativity, that I'm in a place of calmness, that I'm in a place of feeling empowered. I'm in a place of not judging. I'm in a place of feeling joy in my life. I'm a feeling, and I'm in a place of service. I believe life is chiefly service. That's, you know, that's normal. And I know the government wasn't talking about that. Okay. The government was talking about dumbing us down so that we don't ever feel those, what I'm feeling and how I, and I go through life, or maybe how you go through life. So I think we go get it.
I think it's just always important to remember that there is a lot of people benefit by our brokenness.
Yeah.
As individuals, as a society, a lot of people benefit not only in power, but in, you know, financially, by us warring at each other and being at each other's throats and feeling a sense that I don't have all the tools I need, or I am not a good person, or any of the things that are constantly running in our brains that somehow Amazon is supposed to fix, or somehow, you know, buying the next cool gadget is supposed to take care of in our lives. And I just don't think that that's true. And so it's been sort of shocking to see people's responses when I call that out.
Yeah, good. But, well, you know, Amazon, no, I disagree with you. Amazon does make me feel good for at least a minute, when I get it.
At least a minute.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy that minute.
But your point is well made. You know, we're not going to find fulfillment, you know, buying more stuff, or, you know, having a lot more money, or having a new car, all that, you know, all that's fine. It's great. But what does it really do in the long run is, I think it takes us away from, if we believe, you know, believe in this, everything is material, and the more you have, the happier you'll be. That's just BS. It's just not happening.
Yeah.
It's
not happening. You know, we're at a place now where America, which represents about 5% of the world population, creates 50% of the world's waste. So when you look at that from an environmental perspective, you know, our consumption, our sort of need to constantly consume, while parts of it create great benefit in our life, the sense of that we have to do it constantly and in such large quantities and volumes is a problem for the rest of the people on the earth, right? It's a problem for the rest of the for the planet. So and that's just from an environmental perspective. You know, socially, it creates a lot of interpersonal issues as well when we feel like consumption is going to solve the problem.
Well, consumption isn't. So when we get back, we're gonna talk a little bit about. Oh gosh, I got so much I want to talk about. I want to talk about, you know, how our behaviors got us there, what we need to do in our mindset to change this up, what my audience can actually do themselves so that we're not just having a conversation. There's a lot I want to talk to you about. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money, and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash, and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call, so please call right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, and I've got Julio Uh-oh, Julio Vincent.
It's okay.
God, yeah, got that Southern California thinking going on. I got Julio Vincent on my show, and he's got a new book out called Please Unsubscribe. Thanks. You know, how do you see these automated behaviors that I know I've been part of, you've been part of? You know, what's the concept there, and how does that relate to the book, and how do we break some of these automated behaviors?
Yeah. You know, I think it's important to not only recognize where they come from and how we got to this place, but to kind of look at it through the lens of three levels that I talk about in the book of subscription. The outer surface level of subscription being the obvious stuff, right? The low-hanging fruit, the email, the screens, the digital nonsense that comes at us all day long on our phones and on our laptops and on TV. And then I think you've got the sort of middle ring of subscription, which is our social networks and the people that we're subscribed to, whether that's online or in real life. Those are subscriptions as well. Those are tethers. Those are commitments, emotional contracts that we've made with other people to have them in our lives as friends or as colleagues or as acquaintances, whatever that might be. And the third level that I talk about in the book is the underlying subscriptions, right? This idea, you might say something like, oh, I subscribe to that idea, or I don't subscribe to that. And what that really is an understanding of what you believe, what your beliefs are that are running underneath all of this. So the best way to describe it, I think, is if you look at something like a Weight Watchers ad online. Right? What is that activating, and how is it activating on those three levels? You know, if I'm a young woman or a woman who, say, is my age and I'm overweight and I have this belief that somehow I am not worthy of love because of my weight, and I exist in a social network online that shows me pictures every day of that girl from high school who was really popular and really skinny and has a beautiful husband and a beautiful life, and I feel bad, and I'm constantly reinforcing that belief that I have. And then right next to it is an ad for Weight Watchers. I am more inclined to click that ad. And so I think these three levels of subscription are very interrelated. They are the basis of consumer psychology, and they're architected that way so that our consumerism and our big brands and big companies can activate those beliefs in us and get us to click that button. Not all clicking is bad. Not all subscriptions are bad. But I think the sense that somehow our innermost thoughts and feelings are being weaponized against us for the sake of profit always feels a little icky to me. So,
well, it feels icky to me too. And I'll tell you, you know, you of course, you know, in my world, you can protect yourself. We're going to be talking about in your world how we can protect. I think you're part of my world, and I think the you know, the way that we protect ourselves is knowing ourselves, and you know, and. Knowing yourself like that ad, it's like, well, gosh, am I going to feel less than because somebody's skinnier than me? Or am I going to just look at it and go, well, that's an interesting point of view, right? I mean, there are ways we can look at our, you know, realize who we are and not feel bad, right?
And I totally agree. And that's where I think it's so important to hear what I'm really advocating for is a consciousness about behavior. Right? An understanding of self that goes much deeper than I think our modern world allows us to experience or allows us to find or to get in touch with.
Yeah.
And I think that was an experience I had during the pandemic, and I write about it in the book, but it's really kind of about knowing yourself, to your point exactly, so that your behaviors are within your control and that your responsibility to yourself and to the people around you is something that you know are able to kind of guide and shepherd.
Yeah. Well, you know, I consider myself a pretty well-read guy. I'm You know, I'm consider myself spiritually a yogi, right? And you know, the yogis are kind of interesting people. We take the road of self-realization by going within ourselves and looking at what's working, what's not working, stilling the mind, you know, quieting, observing, you know, becoming a really good observer of things. And I think part of, and why do we do that? Well, you know, why I do it is because I wanted to know myself, right? I didn't know what self was. You know, I had somebody early on in my career tell me, Ken, go look in the mirror and stay there for 20 minutes and ask yourself, who am I? Who am I? Which I did. And I didn't get the answers. It would just come back like, well, I don't know who I am. Because of the programming, though. Because of the programming that we are really dumbed down I'm not sure it's a conspiracy to dumb us down. Maybe it is, but I think that it's the society. It's that what we live in, you know, and you know, we're not necessarily taught to be self-reflective, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's a conspiracy. I don't think it's malicious. I don't think that there is an intention there that is negative or bad. I just think there's a great benefit to our not being aware, right? There's a great benefit sometimes to other people and large corporations and some of the cultural forces that are around us if we kind of don't look inside and don't create stillness. And so there's never really an incentive to do that. And that incentive really has to come from you.
It does have to come from us. And I think there's a piece in, you know, that we have to question everything. Well, okay, so I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I want to ask you a little bit about some of the practical steps readers can take after they read your book, which is called Unsubscribe. Thanks. I put it on the screen. We'll be right back talking about the book, and we'll go from there. All right.
Hi everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology, many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Hi, this is Kendi Foster. And before I get back to my guest, I want to just mention a couple things to you. You know, this service is about... This show is about service. And, you know, we're being a service to you, hopefully, to help you to change the way that you see things so that you can actually have more joy, more happiness, more fulfillment, more abundance, more love in your life, right? That's what I do this show for. So I know it sounds a little Mary, let me, what I want to say, a little soft on the surface when I say those things. But the truth is, we all can experience more of that. And we do that by serving each other, right? So I encourage you to pass this show on to people that you care about, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and keep watching, because we are helping people see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. Here's my guest, Julio Vincent, in his new book. We're going to put back on the screen. It's called Unsubscribe, Thanks. And this book is shaking up the world right now. Julio, what are some of the practical steps people can take when they get your book?
So there's about 100 practical and tactical strategies in the book. But I think the best way to think about it is really with a few questions, which is, you know, how can we slow down? How can we put limits back in? And how can we make things more human? And I think you can look at those three questions in any experience or any situation or context, and think through, you know, how do I take what's happening right now, whether it's dealing with my teenage child or buying something on Amazon or, you know, training for a marathon, whatever it might be. Right. How do I slow this down so that the speed really feels sort of aligned to my human body and my human experience, instead of sort of warp speed that our entire existence seems to act in now? The second question being, you know, how can I put limits back in? One of the things that's happened in the last, you know, 10 or 20 years, Ken, is we've eroded limits. We've eroded boundaries. We've eroded the structures that sort of keep our experience day to day aligned to a human experience. So that question is important. How do I put a roadmap back in? How do I put structure back in and limits back in? Whether that's, okay, I'm only going to have 10 apps on my phone, or I'm only going to, you know, look at my email until 7 o'clock at night, or I'm only going to have, I'm only going to send 20 Christmas cards, whatever that might be. How can I create a limit where there really wasn't one before? And third, you know, how do I make this a more human experience? So the example I always use is just being in a grocery store, right? And sort of choosing not to be in the robot line, but to be with people, reinforcing the social fabric, being a part of the community, saying hello to Doris or Marge or Bob or whoever it is. It feels very Mr. Rogers. It feels very like uberly earnest. But I think it's important, right? It's important. That is the social fabric. And we have to sort of renew it day to day. That person may not want to talk to you. You don't have to have a long conversation, but there is a reason they have a name tag on, right? So I think it's important to look for these opportunities in everything that we do to slow down, put limits in, and make our experience more human.
Well, you know, years ago, I decided that I would set my intention that I would put a smile on the cashier's face, right? I didn't know how I was going to do it. I was kind of shy about doing that too. You know, it took a little courage to do that. And you know, now it's become a habit. You know, I look them in the eye, I connect with them, you know, I'll compliment them on, you know, on maybe, you know, their outfit or, you know, or how beautiful their eye makeup is or something, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You know, their tattoos, whatever, it doesn't matter. And, you know, inevitably, you know, they, you know, I put a smile on their face. Usually when I leave, I'll say, you know, I hope you have a great day and with a lot of happy customers. That always gets them because there are a lot of cranky customers.
I'm sure.
Those poor people, you know, but they're not people. They're my friends. They're, you know, we got to start looking at these, you know, everybody's separate from each other. Really, we're all one with one another, right? We have separate bodies maybe, but in at the level that you're talking about, that self, very deep self, we're connected, right? We're very much. Yeah, right? They're showing quantum physics, quantum mechanics, string theory. I mean, everything shows us from the macro and the micro, we're all connected. There's a oneness here.
You know, so my partner is from Southern Europe and a very small country, Montenegro. And he, when he first moved here, was astonished at how much we talk to each other, actually, right? How much we engage with the cashier or the person on the street. And what I realized sort of in the first few years of our relationship was that when you come from a country that is smaller, community is built in. But in America, where there's 320 million people sort of actively and aggressively going about their business and their day and their work, there is a great sense of disconnection, right? We're seeing it. We're seeing a loneliness epidemic across the country. We're seeing the disconnection happen. And so we have to actually actively create that community in a way that other cultures sort of have it built in. So, yes, I totally agree. I think, you know, that oneness is really clear if you take away the trappings of the individuality of it all. But we're kind of trained to be individualistic and to just think about me and to just think about what I look like or talk like or sound like or, you know, the car I drive and the house I live in. So it's really, really important, I think, to actively create.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Everybody wants more freedom, right? I mean, we're in the land of the free, home of the brave, right? Everybody wants freedom. But what you said earlier about limits, so I call them boundaries, right? They take discipline. You know, it takes discipline to get to that place. Nobody wants discipline in their life, right? You know, who wants to discipline themselves? Well, but but that's kind of the programming, right? Because with discipline, with limits, come freedom, right? And come more time, more effort, more energy. Everything comes when you can do that. But we have the society that's, it's kind of chasing pleasure all the time, right? It's a pleasure chasing society that when you look at that, you know, and I've been guilty of it myself, like, you know, I'll go buy the next thing on Amazon, right? Or what have you, but it's not fulfilling. And like you said, that loneliness piece, I once interviewed this lady that was working with the homeless, and I said, so why do people become homeless, right? And she was working with the people that were just about ready to go homeless at the time. And she said, well, it's not what you think. Most people think people go homeless because they have drug and alcohol problems or they're mentally ill. She said, that's a small percentage. Most people go homeless because they've lost their connections. They've lost their connections to one another. They've lost their social connections to their family, to their community, their churches, to their businesses. That's why they go homeless. Interesting, right? Yeah.
Really interesting and so true. And you can see how that happens, right? Like when we move around this country more than any other country on the planet, right? We are very good at just getting up and living in a different town or living in a different city. And that breaks the social fabric to a certain extent. And so, you know, you really have to kind of maintain those relationships, and maintaining relationships is a lot of gardening. You know, you've got to kind of water the plant. And that's an important part of being connected.
And I think we need to relook at that, don't you? I mean, it's like, I just got back from India. We spent 25 days in India, and the divorce rate in India is 1%. In the bigger cities, it's 1.5%, right? Why? Because community. Quite frankly, you know, down in the southern India, you know, it's probably drive Americans crazy, but they all, you know, there's generations upon generations all living in the same community, right? You know?
And living in the same house, so, right? Like,
and in the same house.
To think of that through a modern American, like, perspective, like, we think that's crazy, right? But I'm Italian American. It's only one or two generations where everybody lived in the same house, right? I'm only removed from that experience by, you know, two generations. But otherwise, the grandmother lived in the house, the grandkids lived in the house, like, and that to our American brains is odd, but it created community and it retained a community in a different way, you know.
In a different way. And, you know, I've been a business and life coach for 30 years. I'm about results, right? So when I look at a country that's getting a 1% divorce rate and ours has a 40+% divorce rate, I'm asking myself, why are we doing that? Why are we getting these results, right? And I think that's a lot what the book is about. I think unsubscribe, we have to really start to unsubscribe from some of the beliefs that we bought into. that really are not making, quote, America great. they're you know, or us great. They're hurting us.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad to talk like this, Ken, because, you know, it's very easy to sort of see the book or see my talking about it as about email, right? But that's really kind of the tip of the iceberg when you talk about subscriptions and how our beliefs are reflected to us. You know, the email and the screen and everything that's popping up is a reflection of much deeper and deeply held beliefs. And that's what I'm interested in questioning and in advocating for people to question. Not an easy process by any means, but so important, right, to understanding your values and what you want to get and give in the world and how you want to contribute and be part of the society around you. And it's really hard to do that when you're moving constantly, right? Not only house to house, but just in your regular day, like in constant motion. Right? Yeah.
Well, that's why this book is so important, because, you know, I kind of look at you as, you know, you'd be considered kind of a rebel, right? Which is a good thing. Okay. We have to question our beliefs. We have to question what is, you know, if we're getting the results we're getting. We have polarized societies. We have environments that are, you know, we got oceans that are polluted. We've got, you know, separation between race and culture and creed and everything else. It's like, what? How is that working for everybody? Right?
It's not.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, what? You know, so it's kind of funny. I mean, it's like, you know, at one point, everybody wanted to see me as a white man, right? And you're a black man, or you're a red man, or you're the, and now, you know, everybody, you know, for a while, everybody wanted to see me as now red or blue. Okay. Now I'm either red or I'm blue. I'm like, listen, I'm a soul. I'm an individual that has opinions, but that's not who I am. I'm much deeper than that. I think that's the message that, you know, this book shakes up and starts to get people into that place.
Yeah. You know, I say in the opening of the book, this is not a political book. It's very clear what my politics are if you, you know, as you read it. Yeah. But it's not, it's, you know, our politics have become so divisive is not even the right word, right? Just full of conflict and venom and malice. And my dad and I have distinctly different views politically. But we've had a really good time in the last year of sort of injecting humor and injecting love and injecting a sense of oneness, frankly, because we're father and son, about our politics in a way that has allowed us to discuss it. There's a lot of people who for whom that is just impossible. But we've got to get closer to being able to not see ourselves as just red or blue and see ourselves as members of the same nation.
Well, you know, we can both be right. Okay. You know, I mean, we can both be right. I'm right. You're wrong. You know, wait a second. You know, it's like, what happened to just discussion? Like you said, let's just talk about it with love. Like you said, I love that. Put love in there. You know, if love and wisdom are not in our conversations, then I think we're, you know, then what is, right? What's in there? I think we have to question that, right?
Well, a lot of bullshit. and the reason I use that word very specifically, not only in the subtitle, but in the book, I actually do an exploration of the word and the etymology of the word. And there's a great Princeton professor who wrote an entire book called On Bullshit, Professor Frankfurt, who basically like walks through why our society is so full of the thing both you and I understand to be bullshit, right?
Right.
And I don't repeat it to be offensive or derogatory, but there is a sense of nonsense, right? There is a sense that we are constantly flooded with nonsense and shiny objects and things to distract from the kind of ultimate truth that, like, I got to get through this life and I'm just going to have to, you know, require the help and the love and the service of other people. And so do you. And so do we all as a community of people. And, you know, to your point earlier, right? Like, it might sound a little Pollyanna, But do you want the opposite?
Yeah.
Right? The opposite is war, right? The opposite is constant conflict. The opposite is people getting shot on the street in the middle of Manhattan last week, right? Because of their, professional behavior. So I think it's just really important to be mindful of that and to kind of choose love, because ultimately, if we don't, we're going to get the opposite.
Well, we are. And listen, you know, some of the sages that I follow, right? You know, a lot of people want to change the world. That's great. Okay. But, you know, number one, you got to change yourself. If you want to change the world, you got to change yourself. That's number one. So if you're going out there, you got hatred in your heart, you got anger, you're pissed off, you're a rebel in that sense. And you're out there, you know, trying to quote disrupt, you're going down the wrong path in my world. Mm. You know what? Change yourself. Tune in to find out who you are first before you go out there and try to destroy someone or something because of your programming, quite frankly, that somebody's told you this is the way it is. You know, whether it's it's so interesting. You know, people always blame the colleges and they blame the government. It's like we have to stop all that crap. You got to take personal responsibility, 100% responsibility for everything that's happening to you. If you don't like your life, okay, what are you going to do to change it? That's what I know. Everything.
No, I am with you. I am with you. And the only thing I would add from my perspective and the perspective of my writing is sometimes that means cutting the tethers that keep us on autopilot to behaviors that don't serve us and don't serve the people around us, you know.
And that's hard to do. And it's hard to really do. And it takes courage, and we have to have compassion for ourselves and for others. Compassion's a big missing component today in this world. You know, we have a world based on facts instead of compassion. And, you know, facts are facts, but a lot of times facts are not facts. And you just think they're a fact because somebody told you or some research came out and said it's this way, you know. And, you know, I think we need to really question everything.
Yeah, I think it's important. It's certainly important to do that personal check-in. And to be responsible and to sort of vet your information and understand your information as best that you can, right? And I think we live in an ecosystem of like too much information. And so it's very difficult on a daily basis to take everything in and understand where it's coming from and be savvy about whether or not it's helpful or productive. I mean, that's a lot of time and energy, right?
Yeah, a lot of time and energy. Well, listen, we're out of the time in this segment. So, Julio, thank you so much for having this conversation. We're going to have to continue this. I like this conversation.
Well, it was a pleasure to be here. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. And for my listening audience, the book is Please Unsubscribe. Thanks. How to Take Back Our Time, Attention, and Purpose in a World Designed to Bury Us with Bullshit. By Julio Vincent. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's a Simon & Schuster book. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Simon & Schuster book. Yeah. So they're everywhere. And wow, I hardly wait to get it and read it myself. Sounds like you've done some really good work with this book. Again, thank you so much, Julio.
Thanks, Kev.
And I want to thank all of you for joining me today. This has been another powerful show. If you like this show, please pass it on to those that you care about, that you love, and you would like to help have a little more joy and happiness and love in their life. And from my heart to yours, keep striving to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and be able to do the impossible and be all you can be.